Today, on The Exam Room.
What are some low-calorie foods that don't have a lot of fat that we can eat a lot of and still lose weight and not be hungry?
Yeah, I really want to cite Barbara Rolls, who was at Penn State, and she penned the name Volumetrics. And she did some really interesting studies. She would give people a portion of some vegetables, and then she would give them a glass of water, and she would note the effect on their weight. And then she would do a separate experiment where she would combine the vegetables and the water in a vegetable soup, exactly the same ingredients, but consumed together. And what she found was that somehow having them together tackled the appetite more. So people were less likely to overeat, more likely to lose weight. And so what the idea of volumetrics that she came up with was any food where the calories are lower than, say, the grams of food, that's going to help you. So what are those foods? Obviously soup, things like salads, things like fruit. They're very high in fiber, which has practically no calories. And let me say something that is going to make a lot of dieters squirm, which is carbohydrate is good. Whether it's a potato, rice, or your morning toast, carbohydrate has 4 calories per gram. Fats have 9 calories per gram. So I know so many people memorize the idea carbohydrate is fattening. Carbohydrate is part of taming your appetite.
Welcome to the Exam Room Podcast, brought to you by the Physicians Committee. Hi, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll, raising health IQs coast to coast and around the world, like in the city they call Long Beach, California, North Charleston, South Carolina, and Tijuana, Mexico. Wherever you are, we appreciate you helping to make the world a healthier place. This is episode 27 of season 7, number 526 overall. Now, here is a cold, hard fact for you. Weight loss can feel really, really, really hard, but it can also be way easier than we make it out to be. And believe me, I know how hard weight loss can seem. Having once weighed 420 pounds and done every diet known to man, it seemed, it feels impossible at times. And then one day, it also just seems like a light bulb goes off and it clicks and everything falls into place. So today we're going to be talking about weight loss success and what are the traps that we often fall into when it comes to dieting? What makes these diets so hard? Where are we going wrong? And what can we do to really ramp up our metabolism and put food to work for us to burn some extra calories? Yes, put food to work for us. Today, we are getting all those answers and more. Ways to make weight loss a lot easier with Dr. Neil Barnard. He, of course, the author of the brand new book, The Power Foods Diet. So here's what is on tap from the Exam Room Live. The body and how it fights to retain fat, correcting our diet mistakes, the best foods for weight loss, metabolism boosting foods, after meal calorie burn. That's a fun concept. And then redefining exercise, plus a ton of questions from you exam roomies who joined us live. You submitted them to the doctor's mailbag on Facebook and on YouTube. But before we get going today, don't forget we've got 2 big live shows coming up, including Tuesday night, March 26th in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club. Dr. Barnard and I will be there along with Chef Dustin Harder and Stephanie Ignafo as we present The Power Foods Revolution and celebrate the release of the new book, The Power Foods Diet, and everyone who gets a ticket gets a free copy of the book. It is a huge win. And then a few nights earlier, March 23rd in Toronto, I'm going to be at the Intercare Center with the one and only Dr. Michael Greger for the Planted Expo. Going to be recording an episode of the Exam Room about unlocking the secrets to slowing down aging and staying young. And tickets to both events can be purchased with the links that are in the episode notes. But right now, let's talk about weight loss. Let's talk about weight loss made easy. Yes, indeed. The Exam Room Live with Dr. Neil Barnard, starting now. Thanks for being here, my friend.
It's great to see you, Chuck.
Great to see you. And before we even dive into any of the questions from the exam roomies who have sent them in and are joining us live right now, I got to say, I'm really looking forward to, one, the release of the book. It's coming out on March 26th. I'm really, really, really excited about that. But of course, our big Power Foods Revolution event live at the National Press Club on March 26th as well. Everybody that night who has a ticket also gets a copy of your book. That, my friend, is a win-win.
It's going to be a blast. We're going to have foods for everybody to taste. You're going to be our host for the evening. Dustin Harder will be there talking about the delicious foods that he packed into this book. And it's my job to talk about how the science works and how you put it to work for yourself.
So here is the book right here, The Power Foods Diet. There's a link to order your copy right now in the show description and in the episode notes. But let's talk about dieting and weight loss and where a lot of us seem to be going wrong, because it does seem to be really hard. But can it also be as simple as I said at the top, where one day everything just kind of falls into place? You have that epiphany, that aha moment, like this really should have been this easy all along.
It absolutely. You know, for so many people, they really get hammered by a dieting experience. The automatic thing is, well, I've been eating too much food, so I should eat fewer calories, maybe 800 calories a day for a while until I slim down. The problem is that gets old by Wednesday. You're ready to eat the sofa. You know, your body does not want to be hungry and it rebels. Or some people will do low carb. And then, okay, you're starting off, but then you realize, you know, I'm feeling guilty if I ever have a piece of fruit or a serving of rice or a potato or a sweet potato or bread or all, so many things are ruled out. And that's suffering too. But what we've discovered is that certain dietary patterns are associated with weight loss, like a plant-based diet, keeping low fat. But in addition, within that, there are certain foods that are better than others, meaning that they are foods that tackle your appetite. Tone down your appetite or trap calories so you can't absorb them or even boost your metabolism. So all of those things can be put to work in your breakfast, in your lunch, in your dinner. And that's what makes it easy.
So it sounds to me like you're talking about eating foods that can actually help us burn fat, shed those unwanted pounds, as opposed to eating the foods then that would pack on those pounds. That in itself is kind of inverting what we know of the quote unquote diet model. I love that idea. But let's talk about where a lot of people right now are kind of going wrong. What are some of the more common diet pitfalls that you've heard of over those years that really set us up to fail from day one?
Well, apart from the idea of cutting calories and so forth, some people have the idea, oh, I'll just eat lots of protein. Protein is lean, and that's going to help me. And then, unfortunately, people who do that very often find that their weight loss doesn't continue at all. In fact, they might gain weight because the protein sources they're picking are associated with a lot of fat and a lot of calories, and it ends up not really working very well. One other thing, this is a little bit paradoxical. Exercise is good. It has a lot of benefits, but there are some people who feel the only way to lose weight is with exercise. And so they sign up, they have a gym membership, they're paying a certain amount of money every month, and they go there and they sweat and they hurt, and then they realize this is too much work and they just give it up. You want to do exercise in the right way and do it in addition to a diet change, not instead of it.
Interesting question here. I'm wondering if you are somebody who devotes a lot of time in going to the gym, sweating, and then burning a lot of calories, does the body fight harder to retain a lot of the fat that you may be eating there because it knows that it's going to be burned right off? So it kind of goes into save mode?
Well, your body does go into save mode to a degree, and your body will also go into sort of restore mode. After the exercise is over, you're going to automatically be eating more calories to try to restore what you have lost. Your body is a little bit greedy. If it senses it's losing some fat, it wants to bring it back.
All right. And I want to go back to this idea of eating foods that can actually help you then burn more fat. Let's take a question from Rebecca, for example. Rebecca's wondering, what are some of the best foods that you can eat for weight loss? And it would be great if you could key in on a few of those that you have in the book that actually can help to burn that fat just as soon as you put them down into your belly.
There are quite a number of them, and these were surprises. I want to give some credit to the folks at Harvard. At Harvard University, 2015, they released a study where they looked at more than 100,000 people and found certain foods, if you increase them in your diet, you would lose more weight as the years went by. Number six was the bean group, and that's beans, peas, lentils, plus things made from them, like soybeans turning into tofu, all those things. If people tended to eat more of them, they tended to lose weight. And then group number five was the melon group. That's cantaloupes, watermelons, things like that. And it may be no surprise because they're high in water, high in fiber, pretty low in calories. Number four was the citrus group. And the surprise here was it's not just oranges and grapefruits, but even juices, which are much maligned. People say eat the whole fruit, but juice was associated with weight loss too. So the citrus group comes in. And then the group number three was green leafy vegetables. So that can be spinach, it could be asparagus, whatever. Group number two, that was cruciferous vegetables specifically. So that's Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower. But the number one weight loss food group was this humble, unassuming, modest little blueberry. And blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, the berry group. And this is partly because they're high in fiber, but Chuck, there's an interesting thing about this. Blueberries have anthocyanins. That's what makes them blue. Anthocyanins also, there are some reddish ones that make strawberries red. Researchers in the United Kingdom, 2 years after the Harvard study showed that blueberries were the big granddaddy of weight loss, they did DEXA scans. That's a scanning technique where you can look at the body fat that a person has on their thighs, on their abdomen. They brought in almost 3,000 twins. And what they found is that the twin consuming the most anthocyanins had about 9% less abdominal fat compared with her genetically identical sister. So the anthocyanins in this case were berries, but also they included pears because of that little reddish blush that pears have on them. They all seem to be associated with it. So those would be some starters. And then if you want to get fancy, there are several spices, cinnamon, ginger, hot peppers. We can talk about them too.
Yeah, you've mentioned specifically recently on the show Ceylon cinnamon, which seems to be the granddaddy of all cinnamons when it comes to weight loss here. Have we been able to figure out what compound it is in the Ceylon cinnamon that seems to be so potent here?
Yeah, there's a couple things. Partly, it's because the other cinnamons, like Saigon cinnamon or Indonesian cinnamon, they are a related compound called cassia, a related plant called cassia, which in kind of mild overdose seems to have some toxicity. Whereas Ceylon cinnamon, C-E-Y-L-O-N, as in Sri Lanka, Ceylon cinnamon is not associated with that. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the cinnamon has been dissected by scientists and they found an aldehyde in it. And you know, researchers just kind of make up names for things. They call it cinnamaldehyde, but it's a compound in the Ceylon cinnamon that has a receptor. There's a receptor in your digestive tract that the cinnamaldehyde attaches to. And once it attaches, it triggers the release of a little touch of adrenaline in your blood. And so we think that's what's happening. So you eat it, you know, half a teaspoon, something like that, triggers an adrenaline increase that ramps up your metabolism.
And that's amazing to me. So in addition to the cinnamon, Tom is wondering right now, he's watching on Facebook, he's wondering, you know, what are some other foods that we might be able to eat that can boost that metabolism similarly? It sounds like the blueberry is going to be one. You mentioned hot peppers. Are there some others, maybe some honorable mentions in the book?
Well, there's one overall concept that people need to know about is that if your body is insulin resistant, you can't burn calories. Now that sounds like a mouthful, but let me explain to you what I mean. What are your burners in your body? It's your muscles. If you got muscle mass, you're going to burn calories. But your muscles, you might have a lot of muscles. You might have a lot of muscle tissue. But if your muscles absorb fat particles from your cheese pizza, the fat particles get into each individual muscle cell. This is not thigh fat. This is not belly fat. This is microscopic fat particles within your muscles that came from fat you eat. Once the muscle cell is filled with fat particles, glucose can't get in anymore. If glucose can't get in, it can't be burned. It's floating around in your blood. It's not being burned. Your metabolism goes down. It tanks because your cells are filled with fat, and that is insulin resistance. The fatty cell will not take insulin's direction, which says, come on now. Insulin is trying to say, let the glucose in the cell. It won't do it. So what is the diet adjustment that fixes this? Get the fat out of the diet. When you have no animal products in your diet, if you're on a plant-based diet, there's no animal fat. If you keep oils really low, the fat in the cells starts to dissipate. And we can measure that with magnetic resonance spectroscopy. You can see the fat going away. Happens in your muscles, happens in your liver. And once that happens, that cell sucks the sugar out of your blood, goes into the cell. It's like throwing it in the furnace, and the furnace can then burn it again.
And, you know, here's an interesting question as well from Caitlin, who's wondering, well, let's talk more about metabolism, because I've been told by my nutritionist that I need to eat a lot frequently during the day, many meals, multiple times throughout the day, and that's the key to keeping metabolism up. Is it the frequency of eating, Dr. Barnard, which I have also heard, or is it more that we really need to focus more on what it is we're eating as opposed to how often we're eating?
Both do matter. What you're eating is the most important thing, because you can eat frequently or less often. And if you're eating really fatty, calorie-dense foods, you're going to gain weight no matter what. However, back about, I'm going to say 20 years ago, there became an idea that if we ate frequent small meals over the course of a day, our cholesterols would fall, our blood sugars would get better, and we'd lose weight. Chuck, we were 180 degrees wrong. It didn't work. It really didn't work. People gave it the good college try. It doesn't work. And now people are suggesting that for some people, they might try the opposite, which is very few, rather large meals. You've heard Dr. Kaliova talk about that. Have a really big breakfast, have a pretty big lunch, maybe in the early afternoon, and you don't need more than that. Now, I'm not necessarily suggesting that that's for everybody, but the idea of eating frequently throughout the day really, unfortunately, doesn't work.
All right. And let's stick with metabolism. This seems to be a hot topic right now. Caitlin did not give her age, but she is wondering, Dr. Barnard, how age can affect metabolism and weight loss.
Yeah, age plays a big role, but maybe not in the way you might be thinking. The number one time of metabolic supercharging is not when you're 18. It's not when you're 27. It is when you are a little baby. When you are born, you are doubling your body weight. You're growing really fast. Your metabolism is huge. You are burning calories. Then it kind of settles down a little bit. And through the teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, it stays about the same. When a person is somewhere over about 60 or 70, somewhere in there, it does start to slow down for some people. And that's often because they are less physically active, so they're losing muscle mass. Your muscles are calorie burners. If they start to kind of shrivel up a little bit, your metabolism falls. By the way, that does not have to happen. There are a lot of people north of 70 who maintain their muscle mass and their metabolism is fine, you know, at that age.
And what is it that that person is doing that another isn't? What is kind of the line of delineation in terms of what it is we're eating, maybe even our exercise load to keep that metabolism up versus somebody who just has that real sluggish metabolism after reaching that certain age, so to speak?
Part of it is that they're lacing up their sneakers, they're physically active, they're getting out as opposed to parking in front of the TV. The other thing is, if they are eating the kinds of foods we're talking about, avoiding animal fats, avoiding excess vegetable oil, then you don't have a lot of fat in your muscle cells and they are able to maintain their ability to burn regardless of your age. And the other thing, of course, is that let's say a person is over 60, over 70, over 80, whatever, it's never too late for you to bring in the power foods. Okay, tomorrow morning, you're making oatmeal. Sprinkle on a little cinnamon. The cinnamon has the metabolism boosting effect that I mentioned, completely independent of age. And the amount that worked in research studies, using about a teaspoon a day, researchers burned off about 7 or 8 pounds in patients over a 16-week period. Now, you might say, well, I don't need to burn off that much. I don't need to go that fast. Okay, have a half a teaspoon or whatever. See what you can do with that. And one last thing, for people who love Mexican food, you know, a jalapeno here and there, you feel the burn. When you're having spicy foods, you might find yourself sweating a little bit. Capsaicin in piquant foods, jalapenos and that kind of thing, capsaicin actually stimulates thermogenesis so that your body is turning food into body heat. and you could feel it. So it's evaporating. So these are just tricks that a person can use. Have ginger, have cinnamon, have capsaicins if you want. Avoid the fats, and your metabolism will either be restored or it'll be protected if it's already okay.
You know, that sounds a lot like something that somebody told me about drinking ice water and how the body has to use energy, burn calories to warm up that ice water once you've swallowed it. Is that kind of the same effect, or is there something else special about these peppers?
Well, that's true about ice water, except for the fact that you're never going to eat enough ice water to really make it matter.
You can't drink yourself thin with nothing but ice water?
You could chew the ice too. That'd give you a little bit of exercise, but no. With the capsaicins, it's a relatively small amount of food that does it, and the effect lasts for about an hour. So, you know, I guess you could put a jalapeno in your ice water if you wanted to, but the jalapeno is going to be better than the ice cubes.
I'll stick with lemon water. Thank you. Daphne is wondering if we could talk a little bit more about exercise here. How much exercise are we talking about? Because it seems like generically over the years of the show, we've heard people talk about light exercise, moderate exercise, and intense exercise. So which of those three groups do you think gets that biggest benefit in terms of metabolism boosting?
You know, I think we're rewriting the science as we go along, but let me say one thing first of all. When you are exercising, no matter what kind of exercising you're doing, whether you're walking, jogging, or running a marathon, you know what you're not doing? You're not eating a bowl of ice cream. So one of the best things about exercise is that it's something that makes you feel good, that distracts you from the refrigerator. Okay, that's job one. The second thing that's obvious is the more you move, the more you burn. So the numbers are about roughly 100 calorie burn per mile. And that's whether you walk it or run it. And now that sounds funny because you're going to burn more calories running than walking. However, it takes you longer to walk it. So you're exercising for a longer period of time when you walk. So regardless of speed, it's roughly 100 calories per mile. And Chuck, I have a confession to make. I have often been saying to people that exercise is really pretty limited in its effect on body weight. Because it's only 100 calories a mile, you got to run 5 miles to make it 500 calories. And it's going to ramp up your exercise, so you tend to bring it back. But Chuck, here's my confession. Over the last couple of months, I have been running a whole lot more than I have before. And I am not a person who really needs to lose any weight, but I've lost about 6 or 7 pounds just in that period of time because of a more intensive running regimen. So yeah, there's something there to it for sure.
All right, let's switch to another common diet misnomer, I would say. And that is portion control. You have talked a lot about you really don't need to do that if you're eating the right type of foods. Lucy is wondering how important portion control can be in terms of weight loss.
It's okay to do portion control. It's perfectly fine if you wish to, and if it works for you, go for it. But you shouldn't have to do it. And the reason I emphasize that is for some people, they get so hung up and they put their guilt wraps on with it. Okay, I have the portion I'm supposed to eat is X, but I ate too much. And now I should feel terrible because my appetite got the better of me. Also, if you are controlling portions, what that often means is the food you selected is not a good food. If you have to modify the portion of it, there's something wrong with it. So how many apples should you eat? What's a portion of an apple? One, a half, two? Researchers actually tested this. They brought in individuals and gave them, I'm not making this up, Chuck, 3 apples every day. Day after day after day, and they had to convince these research participants to stick with it, eating this huge amount of fruit. And you know how much weight these people gained? Zero, none. They lost weight. So portion control never makes up for choosing the wrong foods. And there's plenty of foods, these naturally modest calorie, appetite-taming foods that frankly, the more you eat of them, the more weight you lose.
And Virginia is wondering, what are some of those low-calorie, high-volume, quote-unquote, foods that we can be eating that can really help us out in that department?
Yeah, I really want to cite Barbara Rolls, who was at Penn State, and she penned the name Volumetrics. And she did some really interesting studies. She would give people a portion of some vegetables, and then she would give them a glass of water, and she would note the effect on their weight. And then she would do a separate experiment where she would combine the vegetables and the water in a vegetable soup, exactly the same ingredients, but consumed together. And what she found was that somehow having them together tackled the appetite more. So people were less likely to overeat, more likely to lose weight. And so what the idea of volumetrics that she came up with was any food where the calories are lower than, say, the grams of food, that's gonna help you. So what are those foods? Obviously soup, things like salads, things like fruit. They're very high in fiber, which has practically no calories. And let me say something that is gonna make a lot of dieters squirm, which is carbohydrate is good. Carbohydrate, whether it's a potato, rice, or your morning toast, carbohydrate has 4 calories per gram. Fats have 9 calories per gram. So I know so many people memorize the idea carbohydrate is fattening. Carbohydrate is part of taming your appetite. Once you get filled on high carbohydrate foods, your appetite gets turned off and the number of calories you've actually had is lower than it would be otherwise. So bring in high fiber foods, bring in high carb foods. What are those? Beans, granddaddy of all. Beans, peas, lentils. Next up would be the vegetable group. And that's the starchy vegetables like sweet potatoes, but also the non-starchy ones like broccoli. Third up is fruit. And then beyond that is whole grains, breads, rice, that kind of thing.
And that kind of brings me back to what it was we were talking about earlier in the show and that thermic effect of food. Is that the same as the after-meal calorie burn that Dr. Hanakaliova, as you said, has talked about on the show previously?
We first started looking at this back in the early 2000s. We brought in 64 women who had been gaining weight and they were all after menopause, had done Atkins, South Beach, everything, and were really frustrated. And we put them on a diet that was zero animal products, very low in oil. We taught them non-oil cooking techniques, but we measured their after meal burn. And the way you do this, Chuck, is that you put on what looks like a pilot's mask. And so what we're measuring is their oxygen intake and their carbon dioxide output. And with some pretty simple arithmetic, I could tell you how fast you're burning calories. So you bring in the participants, you put on the mask, you measure their calories. Then you have them eat something like a pat of butter. Doesn't affect the metabolism at all. It just slides into your body. Have 2 or 3 pats of butter. Nothing. Have a stick of butter or 2 sticks. Nothing. It does not increase the thermogenesis. It doesn't increase the after-meal calorie burn. Stop. Do the study again with a food that is high in fiber and high in complex carbohydrates with plant protein in it, plant-based food. And what you see is completely the opposite. Your metabolism is sitting here, then you eat the meal, your metabolism goes up, 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 and it stays higher than it has been for a good 3 hours, maybe 4 or 5 hours, depending on the individual. And then to put the cherry on the cake, you stick with this low-fat vegan diet. After 14 weeks, everybody came back. They ate the exact same test meal, sitting in the same chair, wearing the same mask. And what do you think happened? Their metabolism went up, but it went up about 15%, even higher. Why? Because as your body continues to eat this way, the fat is getting sucked out of your muscle cells. It's coming out of your liver cells. So your ability to burn calories, which is already good with these foods, is now that much better. So week after week after week, it gets better.
And forgive me, we may have covered this during an episode with Dr. Kaliova, but what would happen if this was one of those high fiber whole foods like an avocado or a nut? But obviously those two examples also do include fat, different from what you would find in those sticks of butter that you were talking about. But would the person get that after meal calorie burn then, despite the fact that you're still eating a higher fat food?
Regrettably, not to the same extent. And my apologies to all my friends who are making wonderful avocado toast and wonderful organic peanut butter, delicious foods. However, the fat content of these foods is unusually high for a plant, and it will slow down your calorie burn. I mean, keep in mind, nuts are in a tree. You have to climb up and get them. And once you do, they are in a shell. So the idea of actually eating a lot of nuts was something you couldn't do until the 7-Eleven started stocking them. So, yeah. And then when they make the smokehouse flavor, I mean, you can't resist.
But tell me about it.
In nature, people would not be eating these fatty foods really very much. Plants, all the fruits except for avocado and coconut, all the vegetables, all the grains, all the beans are naturally very modest in fat. So your muscles have nothing to fear because the fat is not going to come and fill them up. But now with modern distribution, you can have avocado toast 3 times a day. And unfortunately, although it's good fat, it'll fill your muscle cells up, unfortunately.
Would they then in turn actually work to kind of slow your metabolism down?
Yep. Yes, wow. Yes, it would. And Michael Roden at the German Diabetes Center did some great research on this. And he was here in the U.S. in the 1990s studying with Jerry Shulman and Kit Peterson at Yale. And when he was at Yale, he did an amazing study where he took individuals, young, healthy, skinny people, put in an IV and gave them a lipid infusion. You're putting fat into the body. It goes into the muscle cells and the muscles start taking this on, not within days or weeks, but within just hours, the fat gets into the cells and it slows down the cells' ability to burn calories. Then he did studies with actual meals and he looked at palm oil. Same effect. One single meal will slow down your burn. And then he did it with a healthy fat, canola oil. It's low in saturated fat, but you know what? It still has some of the same effect. Not as bad as the palm oil, but it still has it.
And then I guess the question is, comes to us from Peter, like, guys, I hear you, but you're really creating a rainy day here for my mood because I love nuts and I love seeds. And he's wondering how then it's possible to incorporate them into a healthy diet.
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, there are benefits to nuts and seeds. I mean, there really are. They are high in vitamin E. Vitamin E cuts the risk of Alzheimer's. Vitamin E is a great antioxidant. So for a typical person, if you would like kind of a rule of thumb, I would say 1 ounce per day of nuts or seeds, walnuts, almonds, sesame seeds. And what's 1 ounce? 1 ounce is your hand, pour them in. Once it touches your fingers, that's more than 1 ounce. And here's the other key. Don't eat it. Once you eat it, you're going to fill your hand again. So instead, take your hand, which has now got 1 ounce of seeds in it, and crumble it up, put it on your oatmeal or your pancake, and use nuts as a flavor. Use them as a flavoring. Don't use it as a primary snack food, because you know exactly what I mean. One handful of nuts down the hatch leads to another one, another one, another one, especially if they are flavored. So use them as an ingredient. But if you are really trying to lose weight aggressively, if you're trying to tackle diabetes, or if you have a hormone-related issue like menopausal hot flashes or endometriosis or menstrual cramps, for you, I would suggest setting the nuts aside for right now because you need to really cool down your fat intake to a greater degree.
And Fran has an interesting question here, kind of goes hand in hand with what it is that we've been talking about. She's wondering, what are some specific signs that we should be looking for that could signal that the metabolism is in fact slowing down?
You may be unaware of it. You may not be aware of it, but there are sometimes signs that you can discover. One is that you're standing on the scale and it's going the wrong direction, even though you're not changing anything. Your diet is about the same, but now you're gaining a little bit of weight. The other thing is sometimes people have other symptoms as well. You look in the mirror and your skin and hair don't seem healthy. Your hair is a little bit more brittle than it was before. Your gut, your digestion is not working very well. If you're having these symptoms, you may wish to ask your doctor to check your thyroid, because if your thyroid gland, this little Clark Kent at the base of your neck, which turns into a Superman when it can, because it regulates your energy level. If it is not getting the iodine that it needs, your metabolism is going to slow down because you're not making enough thyroid hormone to keep your metabolism up. So those are some of the signs to look for.
And, you know, it just kind of makes me wonder whether or not everybody at a certain, it seems like there's blanket advice. Like, you know, at a certain age, you go to get this screening. When you're 5 years older, you go to get this screening. And when you're this age, you have to start taking Centrum Silver. You know, is there a certain age where all of us should be starting to become a little bit more in tune with our metabolism and paying really close attention to things? You mentioned that really into your 50s, that's when things, you know, seem to be pretty steady. But then when you hit 60, that's the age to start being on the lookout for it. So would you say that 60 is that magical number where you really want to start paying closer attention to everything?
I think your rule of thumb is reasonable, Chuck, that when people hit 60, 65, 70, that's when they need to be especially attentive. That said, these symptoms can happen really early in life. And I'll give you a quick example. I was mentioning iodine. You need iodine in your diet because the iodine goes to your thyroid and the iodine makes thyroid hormone. It's the essential ingredient for thyroid hormone. Where is the iodine going to be? Iodized salt. Okay. But we're modern people. We eat Himalayan salt. You know, we're having kosher salt. It may not be iodized at all. So you might be missing iodine in your diet. Now, you can have then iodized salt. It's great. Or this is the reason to visit your nearest Japanese restaurant, because the nori that they wrap around the cucumber roll or the asparagus roll, loaded with healthy iodine, or the wakame, which is in the miso soup, loaded with iodine. The sea vegetables bring it to you in the healthiest possible way.
So let's take things home here with a couple of other practical type questions, as I like to call them. Number one, Claire is somebody who's also been struggling, and I think that she's in the same boat as a lot of others when it comes to weight loss. She's wondering what advice you might have, some strategies for managing cravings and hunger, particularly for a lot of these higher fat foods that we've been saying, get out of the diet. How can you manage those cravings so that you can instead turn to these healthier foods and not pull your hair out at the same time?
Oh, such a good question, because, you know, everybody can have a craving here and there. And let me suggest a couple of things. The first is, if there is something that leads you astray, if it's a problem food, then don't tease yourself with it. Don't have it in your house. I'm talking about, you know, junk food or whatever it is. Just don't have it around, because what we're going to do is we're going to tease ourselves. We're going to try to be strong. But, you know, food manufacturers are working overtime to overcome your resistance. They know exactly how to make these foods irresistible. They're stronger than you are most of the time. The reason this is important is a lot of people say, well, moderation in all things. Moderation, yes, for good things. You want some broccoli, but not broccoli all the time. You want fruit, plenty of it, but not all the time. Moderation in good things. But if something doesn't love you back, don't have it at all. Leave it out of your diet completely. So, because otherwise you're going to tease yourself. I use the word just forgetting. Let's say a smoker, it decides, okay, I really need to quit, but if I'm at a party, I'll have a cigarette. That reignites the memory of how much you liked nicotine. But if you decide, I'm just not going to have any cigarettes at all, then forgetting, you just come in, you pave over all those memories about how you felt about tobacco, and you're 6 months out, you haven't had any, and you just don't care about it. It's gone. You can use that same thing with food. If you just separate yourself from a food that's got you into a rut, then the forgetting process paves over those memories, and you're not going to have such a big problem. And one last thing I would say, if you crave something, that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. There are people who crave mangoes and they crave papayas and so forth. That's A-okay. Have at it. I know for sure you're not going to eat 16 mangoes, so you're going to be okay.
Oh, you haven't met Cyrus Kambada. That man can eat some mangoes. Holy cow. I mean, that's his Instagram handle, Mango Man Nutrition. I love that dude. All right. You were talking about Japanese sushi and miso soup, some specific examples there. But Margo is also wondering, what are some other healthy snacks that people can really turn to ramp up that metabolism, get that after meal calorie burn, and really support them in their weight loss goals?
Okay. Fruit comes right at the top, obviously. And that's for a couple of reasons. One is it can always be around. It can be in your desk drawer or something like that. Or if you've got a cantaloupe or a watermelon, put it in your freezer. Put it in your fridge. Cut it up. Put it in a bowl so that it's ready when you are. Otherwise, if you leave that watermelon whole, it's just sitting on your counter, you're not going to eat it. You know, cut it up, make it, put it there. And if you happen to graze on it, no harm done. It's not really high in calories. It'll sustain your metabolism and it's not going to be fattening at all. So fruits, I think, always come at the top. If you're consuming a snack, the low-fat versions are always better. Now, I got to tell you, we did a study years ago looking at weight loss. The rules were, it was no animal products. We kept oils really low. Those were the only rules. One day, our research participant said, did you know, Dr. Barnard, that Twizzlers are vegan? And I got to tell you, I said, let me look at the pack. I guess it's true. You know, it's just sugary, starchy, artificially colored junk. And that isn't what we were suggesting people ate, but you make your rules in research, you got to live with them. And what we discovered that even the people who were vegan, low fat, but eating Twizzlers also, they lost weight just like everybody else. Why? Because there's no animal fat. There's not much of any kind of fat. And so people did all right. Now, I'm not recommending them, but a low-fat kind of sugary food for a lot of people is really not a big problem.
All right. And last question. We've talked a lot about food. We haven't talked so much about drink, though. Joss is wondering, how do beverages like green tea or coffee impact weight loss? I believe that there are studies floating around the universe, Dr. Barnard, that say both can be beneficial here.
They will. Coffee drinkers will tend to be a little bit slimmer than the non-coffee drinker, and a tea drinker, green or otherwise, will tend to be a little bit slimmer too. And there are lots of compounds in these things. There's a little bit of theobromine in them, a number of other things. But the 600-pound gorilla that is sipping your cup of coffee is caffeine. Caffeine is the element that does indeed raise your metabolism a little bit. Now, here's the bad news. Two issues. The first is that your body will eventually start to accommodate to that, so that you might get a little burn at first, but then you might end up really not getting a huge burn as in subsequent years. The second thing is, you go to Starbucks and you say, give me a double latte, and you discover it is a formula for weight gain. Why? Because it's coffee and a whole boatload of milk, and milk is a mixture of fat and sugar. So what goes into your coffee can be as important or more important than the coffee itself.
Let me do one more thing, like we're famous to do here on the show, and sneak one more question in there. We also haven't talked about sleep yet, and I want to get to Oscar's question really quickly, because I'm sure that a lot of people are wondering about this. How important is sleep in terms of weight loss and keeping the metabolism healthy?
Oh, sleep is really important in a number of ways. I mean, the first is a little bit obvious. You can't go to the refrigerator when you're unconscious. That's good. And now, this is real, Chuck. How many people stay up till 11, 11:30, 12, 1? You're awake, and what are you doing? You know exactly what you're doing. You got the remote in your hand, and you're going to the refrigerator, and you're seeing what's there. When you're unconscious, that all stops. That's number one. Now, when you become unconscious, your metabolism does slow down. It does, because your body is not moving at all. It doesn't slow hugely, maybe 15%, something like that. But when you're asleep, something magical happens. Sleep is when your body starts restoring leptin function. Leptin is a hormone, comes out of your fat cells, and it turns down your appetite. It's an appetite-taming hormone. When you're asleep, your leptin comes back. When you're asleep, your insulin resistance goes down as well. Your insulin sensitivity improves. So let's say you're not. What you discover is that your leptin is not working. Your appetite is out of control. And is this not true? If you've really been sleep deprived, you'll eat anything just to get through the day. This is not a time when people have really good resolve. And researchers have looked at what is the optimum amount of sleep. And the way they calculated this is, they looked at huge groups of people, how many hours of sleep did they report, and what was their body mass index. And if you believe the research, the sweet spot was 7.7 hours of sleep. That was where you hit the lowest body weight. Now, you can take it with a grain of salt, but what they're suggesting is sleep deprivation is terrible. But if you're the kind of person who just never gets out of bed at all, that's not so good either. So do what you can to get some sleep. If you're having trouble sleeping, get some exercise during the day so that your muscles are tired, so that they demand sleep. A half hour before you lie down to sleep, stretch and yawn like you were a little six-year-old kid. I know this sounds funny, but if you do that three or four times, it resets the brain to go into sleep. And also be careful about alcohol and caffeine. Caffeine, we've said some good things about, but it makes sleep rocky for some people, and so does alcohol. alcohol will metabolize to an aldehyde that at 4 o'clock in the morning wakes you up. So those are a few tips.
And the book is The Power Foods Diet by Dr. Neil Barnard. There's a link to order your copy right now in the show description and in the episode notes. And the party to celebrate the book is coming up March 26th, very soon, at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Dr. Barnard, you and I are going to be there, along with Chef Dustin Harder, Stephanie Ignafo from Plantspiration, and a whole lot of exam roomies and health enthusiasts. We're all getting together to celebrate the release of your new book and put the power to food for work for us. And I think that that's just going to be an extraordinary evening. I cannot wait.
Chuck, we're really going to have a party. It's going to be such a blast. Whenever you and I and Dustin and everybody, Stephanie, we get together, we have so much fun. And I hope exam roomies from far and wide are able to join us. The Press Club is a beautiful spot. The food will be there. Stephanie's story in particular is astounding. So wait till you hear that. And everybody who comes gets a free copy of The Power Foods Diet as well. And I do have one request. When you come, share the book with somebody who needs it. That's the most important thing, because there are a lot of folks who are kind of on a rough path and they're beating themselves up. But when they learn how easy it is to get their weight back in a better direction, you never know. You might have really saved them a lot of trouble. You might even have saved their life.
Absolutely. No question about it. And certainly I wish that I had this information a number of years ago when I made a different decision to undergo weight loss surgery. I will never say that I regret it, but certainly knowing now what I do, I would have made a separate decision. And I think that this can really help a lot of people out who are just feeling so lost and hopeless. And so it does have an unbiased, believe it or not, absolute endorsement. So thank you for releasing the book. There's so much great, powerful information in there, Dr. Barnard. My hat's off to you.
Well, thank you. And I want to thank Dustin and Lindsay for creating the great recipes and all the people who loaned us their own experiences that we shared in the book as well. I hope people have fun. They learn a lot. And I hope they're able to reach their health goals once and for all.
So pcrm.org/events to get your tickets, or there's a link in the episode notes as well. And I want to let you know that today's episode of the Exam Room Live has been powered by the Gregory J. Ryder Memorial Fund. You know, the Gregory J. Ryder Memorial Fund supports organizations just like the Physicians Committee that carry on the love that Greg had for animals by promoting a plant-based health and also working to end animal abuse, while also emphasizing programs that promote systemic change, which means that we as human beings also majorly benefit. And you can visit them right now online at gregoryreiterfund.org. You see the web address up on your screen, gregoryreiterfund.org. That's R-E-I-T-E-R fund.org. And Dr. Barnard, I'm pretty sure Allison Mahoney is going to be joining us on the 26th of March as well. It's going to be really good to see her.
Oh, I love Allison. I can't wait to see her. You know, Greg has such a marvelous heart for animals and was just the most wonderful person. And Allison has just carried forward that spirit so beautifully. So I hope she's there and I want to say hi.
Absolutely. So hi, Allison, if you're watching today as well. Dr. Barnard, I want to thank you for having a marvelous time with us here on the show, really helping to make weight loss a lot easier. I think that once we start to understand a lot of these concepts, it's like we said at the beginning, that light bulb goes off, you have that epiphany, and everything starts falling into place as you march forward to a healthier future.
Thank you, Chuck.
Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, that is when and where we do the Exam Room Live. That is your best opportunity to ask experts like Dr. Barnard your questions. So set a reminder, mark your calendars, Wednesdays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Jump over to the Physicians Committee's YouTube channel or Facebook page and join us there. Now, we have been talking a lot about weight loss, but here's one more fun fact, because you can just never have enough of them. It's kind of like that old Jell-O adage, there's always room for Jell-O. Well, there's always room for some more facts. So this fact comes to us from 2020 and a study that was conducted in the UK. And this study finds that the average person will go on an unbelievable 126 diets during their lifetime. Yeah, 126. And with a number that high, it's no surprise that a lot of these diets, we don't stick on them for very long. The study finds that most fad diets, the will to sustain them only lasts about 6 days. not even a week. And the most popular diet chosen back in 2020 for this study was Atkins, but there were still plenty of others who popped up on the board. The cabbage soup diet, for instance. Didn't know that was still a thing, but it is. Other popular choices were keto, South Beach, and juice diets. But man, 126 diets over the course of a lifetime. That is a lot. But that's also why I like the Power Foods diet, because it is a diet for a lifetime. So don't forget that you can join us for the Power Foods Revolution in person, Washington, D.C., March 26th at the National Press Club. Dr. Barnard's going to be there. Chef Dustin Harder is going to be there. Stephanie Ignafo, who had an incredible transformation, she too will be there. And that is also the day that the Power Foods diet is released. And everybody who purchases a ticket to the Power Foods Revolution and our taping of the Exam Room that night, they get a free copy of the book. You can't beat that. So head over to pcrm.org/events to get your ticket today, or click the link in the episode notes. And if you're in Toronto, our friends up in Canada, I'll be joining you a few nights earlier, Saturday, March 23rd at the Enercare Center. I'm going to be going one-on-one with the great one, Dr. Michael Greger, talking about unlocking longevity and his book, How Not to Age. Plus, I'm going to be sticking around, hanging out at the Planted Expo the next day. Going to be speaking there as well. So can't wait. You can get all of your tickets to both the podcast taping and the Planted Expo at plantedlife.com. Or we made it easy for you. There is a link in the episode notes to pick up your tickets. And if you haven't already done so, go ahead and follow the Exam Room by the Physicians Committee on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you get your shows. Subscribe and leave a 5-star rating and a nice review. We are curious about how a plant-based diet or how something you learned on the show has helped you to improve your health. Tell us about it in the review with that 5-star rating, and we will do our best to read that right here on the show so that you can inspire others and get them going on their path to change as well. But for today, that is going to wrap things up. I want to say thank you one more time to Dr. Barnard for being here and raising our weight loss health IQ. And for everyone at the Physicians Committee, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll. Thank you so very much for listening. And remember, as always, keep it plant-based.